Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today on Mages, Sages, and Seers, I'm proud to bring you Kamwast, also known as Michael K. Waterman. Greetings and welcome, Kamwast. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful as well. It's been a long, busy day, and now I'm relaxing talking to friends. I'm really interested in learning what you have to share about the four directions and the four elements in the Kemetic tradition.
I am so excited to bring this to you. This is something every one of you can use on their altar, and this is why I want to present it to you in the style of Egypt, of Kemet. So, Ankhu Jat Sened, everyone, which is life, health, and prosperity, and welcome. It is a greeting we use and have for thousands of years.
Would you like me to share the image that you sent me of the altar?
If you wish, it would be perfect.
I will. As you're speaking, I will do so.
Bless you, Hercules.
Thank you. Bless you, too.
What it will show you is what the way I have lit my altar with the four directions and the goddesses and gods, Niteru, who protect the four directions and four elements. You will see to the far northwest the goddess Isis. Behind her would be Lord Osiris. They are the lords and ladies of the west. They protect the land beyond life, transcends all worlds. But in this case, she defers to her husband Osiris, and they rule together in the west. Directly diagonal to them would be Isis' twin sister, the Lady of Mysteries, who is Lady Nephthys. She is the southeast, and she diagonally goes across the altar from her sister. Behind her stands her husband, the Lord Set, the god of all that is emotion and energy and sometimes anger and ego. Set is very close to Zeus because he uses thunderbolts and Thor. So I want you to be able to relate to him that way. Does that make it easier for you?
Of course, it makes it a lot easier.
So think of Set as Satan, as the devil, which is a very bad mistake. Set and Osiris and Horus and Isis had a family argument. Yes, Set cut off Isis' head and cut Osiris into about 19 pieces or so, and Horus avenged his father. But afterwards, they all went to the Lord Ra, the keeper of the sun, and they all basically apologized for their uprising. Meanwhile, back to my altar. To the southwest, you have the goddess of fire and protection, and that is Selket. She is the most beautiful of all goddesses. If you see on Tutankhamun's tomb, you often see Selket, a beautiful queen wearing a scorpion on her head in gold. Behind her is the Lord Heru, Horus, the sun, bringing brightness, knowledge, and passion into the world, and the breath of life. You will always put your Ankh in the southwest. I move diagonally to the northeast, and you have Nis, who is considered the keeper and creator of time. She is behind the Lord Thoth, the Lord of knowledge and information and language. And these energies radiate. If you move the goddess statues a certain way, you'll feel a huge vibration. If you're looking at the altar, you will see the glow between all of them, and you will see the energy. Now, there are cross quarters, and those are where the sons of Horus come in, and they are water, earth, air, fire. Earth, air, water, and fire. You have Imset, between the northwest and the northeast, and he is wind, cold wind in the north, blowing down onto the world to bring information from the high gods. To the east, you're going to have Duabmutef. Duabmutef is a very ancient being called one of the sons of Horus because during the dynastic period, the entire Egyptian pantheon became family. Don't you have that also in Greece, where the gods of Olympus are all family, all related?
Yes, they're part of the ruling house of the Olympians, and the different phases in the succession in the heavens is generational. And each generation is more human, I guess, for lack of a better term, than the one before it.
True. Also in Egypt, you have, I will call them the Great Aeneid, and they are the Osiris, Ra, and Isis and Horus family. They are the main deities besides the Lord Amun. To go back to my altar. So now you have Duabmutef. You're going to move down into between the southeast and southwest, and you have Hapi. Hapi is the Nile, but he's also in this regard shown as an Anubis-headed dog, a dog-headed deity. They also will rule the canopic jars. Each one will hold a kidney, a stomach, the liver. The heart, of course, as you know, in mummification, as you spoke to last time, was left back in the body. Thought that the whole soul came and was derived and was housed in the heart. The brain, as you know, the Egyptians pulled out. They had no idea what it was for. They thought it was basically... Well, and he poked a hot poker into the nose and swished it around and sort of poured the brain out of through the nostrils. Not very comfortable if you were alive. I'm sure that didn't happen very often. Now, in the West. Oh, yes. I think we have enough people that have scrambled brains. Usually they're in government, aren't they? Well, 4 years ago, we knew that was really happening. I don't know if he had that much brains to scramble, but that's another story.
For another day.
Yeah, okay. Beyond my time. And you're going to have Duabmutef between Selkesh and Isis. And he's a very mysterious being. He guards your shadows and also the world between the living and the dead. But he is with Anubis and Apua, the twins, the gold and the silver and black dogs. They watch the gates. In Greece, you have Cerberus.
Yes.
I always will relate, exactly. I will always relate to the Egyptian, the Greek to the Egyptians. So I know it makes it easier for people from the West to understand. These energies are also accompanied by different stones and oils and incenses. Each one of the altar pieces has a different one to pray to do different things. For instance, with the Northwest, you have Osiris and Isis. So you have, for Isis, you have lotus oil, lotus incense. For Osiris, you have cedar wood and cypress. If you move over to Neith and Tehute, you have sandalwood. And Neith also like the fragrance of the iris. So those are also important, those incenses. And when you put them all together, you're going to get fragrances that are going to work into the synapses of the brain, and it becomes, as somebody would say, very heady and very spiritual. Behind my voice, you're hearing an Egyptian meditation tape that I use, which is called Duduk, and it's a very amazing thing. It puts you in a high state. Let's go back to the altar. So I'm talking about now Nephthys and Set, and I use Narcissus very well. This is a Greek flower, is it not? But Narcissus,
yes.
And lavender, so that you have a hazy, sleepy area there. And Nephthys is a very interesting goddess. Most people don't know much about her other than she's Isis' sister. Nephthys is the goddess of shadow and mystery. She is the one, if you need to know something, it's not right. She is the one to go to. She will give you an answer from beyond where you are. If you're lost, she's also the one that will help you. Set is also, as I said, considered very negative by the West, which is foolish. Set and the goddess Sekhmet also fight disease. So if you haven't had a booster shot, talk to Set. And he will help you heal. I take light of it because I think that people don't focus on the energies of the high deities anymore, and they need to, as you do. The sacred 12 are coming back, and it is so, for the most part, in Alexandria in Egypt, which was the city of knowledge at the end of the dynastic period, which ended, of course, with Cleopatra the VII. I'm going back now. So where we have Selket and we have Horus, we have light. I use very strong cinnamon incenses and frankincense. Selket likes the energy, the smells that are very powerful and strong. So you have incenses that have cinnamons and gingers, and flowers like gold, marigold and goldenrod. Chrysanthemum, those are fragrances, carnation. These are incenses that she would use. When you are to address each of the four corners, there is a prayer, complicated prayer for each one, to ask, I am in the north and I do this, and I want this to be accomplished, south, east, west. Do you have any questions for me, Hercules?
No, I'm listening and I'm learning. If I have a question, I will jump in and ask it.
Please. And I want to say, over the period of the dynasties, which is about 7,000 years, these positions changed. The most famous creation corners would be in the tomb of Tutankhamun. You will see the four golden goddesses, perfectly, beautifully carved. They allegedly are images of the his wife, Ankhesenamun. I wanted to say her original name, which is Ankhesenamun, but she's Ankhesenamun. And apparently, if that's true, she's quite beautiful. There are others that say that those four goddess images are Nefertiti. It's been hinted at that Tutankhamun's tomb was not originally his, but was that of Nefertiti's. Mm. The statues, even the mask, look more feminine than masculine. But who are we to say? It's 4,700 years ago. So it's hard to, and there isn't any. If it were she, they would want to keep that hidden, I would think. So when I work with the faces, as a pagan also, I have been taught for many, many years, a chant which blesses the circle, the square or circle altar. Would you like me to use that for you?
Oh, of course. That would be wonderful.
Okay. So holding a chalice of water and a chalice of salt, I sprinkle them across the altar and I say, water and earth where thou art cast, no spell nor adverse purpose last, but not in complete accord with we, because it's going to be a ritual group, not me.
Mm-hmm.
But as my will and as our will, so must it be. And then we will ring sistrum and bells and drums to break the negative energy around the area. We will then take an oil lamp or a candle and incense and say, fire and air where thou discharge I lay, no phantom in our presence say, but not in complete accord with we, but as our will, so must it be. Now, this is a chant that was used by Raymond Buckland, written many, many, many years. Yes, and Raymond Buckland used this in many of his Wiccan his pagan rituals, his witch rituals. This has been translated, though, from Old English. They've seen it in Greek and ancient Egyptian. So this is a very, very old chant. And when you are done with those energies and you feel that the earth and water and air and fire and north and south and east and west are satisfied, I, as high priest, take my staff and I walk around the entire altar space. And I hold it high, and I have, again, the bells and the sistrum and the drums ring out the energy, and I will shout, and I ask you all to do this too. Let there remain within this frame, meaning the room you're in, the space mm-hmm. you're in, let there remain within this frame no adverse thought nor enmity, no anger, no negative energy, no have you. Hear our will, we command of thee, and you must do this with strong intonation. Hear our will, we command of thee, for as our will, so must it be. Boom, boom, and then the energy is there. The room is sealed. Can you feel it?
Yes, it's very powerful.
It's very powerful. And my bedroom is now sealed shut, energy-wise. I feel very safe. I am surrounded by my Niteru anyway. I have sent one of my Facebook posts. I showed the new altar in my bedroom with the tiny miniatures of all the gods and goddesses. I'm so delighted with them. And they're in what looks like the Temple of Dendera, in the Temple of Hathor, which is so beautiful, with lotus columns and the images of Hathor.
Yes, I've been to the Temple of Dendera in the museum, and it's very,
that's
very...
That's Dendor.
Oh, okay. And that
was built by Octavian. It's not even Egyptian. Oh, okay. It was built by the Romans. It's probably originally a temple built by Cleopatra VII, and the Romans, as the Romans would do, took over. Because mm-hmm. it says on it, we are honoring, I think it's called, it's the governor, basically. I'm trying to think of the word, but it's the governor. And it shows all the gods and goddesses of the Egyptian pantheon, the Niteru, honoring what looks like a pharaoh, but it's not the pharaoh, it's the governor.
Okay. Still very, very powerful vibes. Last time I went to the museum, I sat there for a couple of hours just basking in the vibrations.
Have you seen the statues of Hercules in the Greek section?
Yes, I have.
There's an amazing, I guess it's First Dynasty statue where his arms are missing, but he has a lion wrapped around his head and his shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
Forgive me. Let me drink something just for a second here.
Sure.
So that altar, my altar always has a black piece of marble under my goddesses and my gods. Why? It's reflective. And when I create the energy, I also create a double pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm creating green, blue, yellow, and white energy to go up high into the sky and go down below us. So we have an octahedron, a double pyramid, in which the altar space is then encased. That will protect everyone that's doing the ritual at that moment. And that must be by each member of my group deconstructed at the end of the ritual. Now, I have to tell you something. When I train people, we will have an Isis, a Hathor, a Nis, a Selket, priestess that will stand in those corners. There will also be an Anubis and an Apawat, an Osiris, mm-hmm. a Horus. All those Niteru are represented by priests and priestesses in my ritual workings. And that is what I'm working on now to train people. I have several people now that I'm working with to learn those energies. And it takes a while.
Yes, it does.
You have to, I'll quote Spock, you have to meld with that god or goddess. You have to become mm-hmm. A vessel, a chalice, as you have to Hercules. Very much so. The lady Pina, who has become an amazing image of Bas, or Tamesu, who has become the Lord Ta. There is so strong energy, as I am with Osiris. And those energies, you know, must work that way. And each person that works with me will be trained for a long time to see where they belong on the altar space.
Right.
And when you have that group, we had... an amazing, amazing group when I lived in Long Island. Our Pernateru was unbelievably energy. The energy was unbelievable. And I had at that time a stone altar, a marble altar, a double leveled. The gods and goddesses were on the top. The elements were down below. And the things that you would work with, like your chalices and your athame, bells, what have you, were on the second level. And it was such a powerful energy. And we broke it up into different other groups after a while, which was good because it was getting a little intense.
Right.
It was wonderful, but it was the apartment was too small to house that energy. I was afraid we were going to blow up the building.
So,
in
your rituals, you combine elements ranging from antiquity to the modern times.
Well, like, for instance, when I create Ushabtis, they are the little creatures, the little things you find in a tomb that are supposed to go help. Well, the Egyptians mm-hmm. used them in the living. So I've created modern Ushabtis. Some of them hold cell phones instead of ancient Egyptian tools, or they have a briefcase. Or they have a laptop. They're not carrying guns and such, but they are carrying modern equipment, and I think that works.
I also will
include. Go ahead, Hercules. I'm sorry.
No, I said I think that works. So also, it's good to. We're no longer living in antiquity. We're living in this day and age, so it's good to have these things grow and develop and. Remain alive in our time as well.
When I create a new Ushabti for someone, I create the activation ritual that was written by different high priests and priestesses of different temples. I put into the Ushabtis crystals and chakra stones de rigueur to the person I'm working with, and they will look exactly like you. It's kind of like an Egyptian voodoo doll in a way, but has more positive connotation. What we didn't know when Egyptology began was that they weren't just used for the dead, that they had them in the house. It was kind of like Grubhub. You couldn't pick things up, so you'd have the new shop to do it for you.
So they're like house elves for people who are familiar with Harry Potter or homunculi or egregores, or you could call them what
you wish.
Well,
what's his name? Dobby, right?
Dobby, yes.
Dobby. Right. Well, it's kind of like him, yes, the house elf. But these work on the astral plane. Part of the ritual says that I work for positive change on the physical plane, so you might, I'll call it my proxy, will work on the subtle plane, the astral plane, to do the same thing for me. So you're working on spiritual and physical plane at the same time. And my gods and goddess statues in my altar are, to me, Ushabti. They have spiritual vessels. I'm not like little old lady Catholics that kiss the feet of the statues. I do not believe in that. I think that's silly. I know their artwork. But I do know that we've imbued them with certain of our own energies and that they will then be a beacon to the higher forces. And is that how you Greeks saw the statues of your gods and goddesses too?
Yes, there's a Greek tradition in theurgy, and we've had a theurgy conversation on the channel for years. It's been ongoing. They're called living statues. And although there actually were animatronics in ancient times, at least during the Hellenistic period, which is known as the Greco-Egyptian period to many,
That's right.
The day of Alexander until the death of Cleopatra, roughly, and the first Caesars, there were, they had a very wide range of devices. They had coin-dispensed coffee, hot beverage and cold beverage. They had sliding doors where you step on a panel, it opens doors. And they had animatronic shows. They were pretty sophisticated. So there were statues that moved electronically or as puppets, as animatronics. But they also had astral entities. And with the theurgy, you could anchor the God into an object, into a statue, into a person, or into yourself. And last option seemed the best. Well, I thought, since I was very young, what could be cooler than anchoring Hercules into our world? You know, so that's kind of been the basis of my own journey. But yeah, we have very similar concepts, and they're very ancient, and they did express themselves best during the Greco-Egyptian period.
Now, I also work that way with dolls. Shanti are working, but I also use modern dolls to make them look like the person I'm working with. And there is an energy there, an energy form. People that come to my apartment will look around and see dolls. And the dolls are, to me, they're not toys. They're energy forms. And I use them that way, exactly as you would use an Ushabti, to make that energy work. And it is, as I said, the same way with the little statues on my altar. They are given spiritual energy, and they are able to do things because I've given them the permission as well as the power to do that. But
in the Egyptian tradition, are they dissolved after a while? Some traditions have them stick around, and some advise you dissolve them after temporary usage. What do they do in the Egyptian tradition?
Both. Some are made of what would be like clay dough bread form, which is salt and flour.
Mm-hmm.
Some were made of wax. In later years, in the Hellenistic time, Cleopatra's time, they were made of lead, and they would be melted exactly in high fire. They could not be used again. Wax was also used, and as I said, this I'm sure you made when you were a kid with diamond crystal, salt, and flour. That kind of a clay dough. Well, that was like, it was like a bread, but that's what we made them out of too. And I still do. If you want to do something for temporary work, you do that kind of thing. I carve into them the hieroglyphs that will give the energy form the reason why it's there.
Right.
You know,
I
will put on a person's zodiac sign. I put on their name in hieroglyph and their purpose. And very simple. And what
Lady Ray used to do that on candles. I remember when I first met her.
Oh, yes, she does.
Years and years and years ago, in a long conversation. And also, I used to use the runes for the same reason. I use the runes to, you know, basically imbue it with purpose and also to figure out a name for it.
Also, I know in Alexandrian Greek, in Alexandrian Greece, Greek Egypt, that they used to use cowrie shells and little small other snail shells with Greek letters on them, which also corresponded to different ritual energies. And that is done in Egypt, too, with what's called Egyptian tiles, which are an awful lot like runes.
Yes.
They have a meaning, and they're thrown the same way runes are. And the Greeks used knuckle bones, I think it's called, and the shells. So that all those energies from the Mediterranean are all linked together. And I'm sure your ritual energy, when you, for instance, when they would open the Temple of Athena, I know that they would dress her in gold, and she had crown jewelry and beautiful cloth of silk gowns that she was given. And the same thing is true of Venus and Zeus, Deus. And the same thing is true every single day. In the temples of Egypt, the god or goddess form statue was dressed, anointed, blessed, given breakfast. There was a sacred, offering made, and then the god would end or begin his day. So that was kind of cool, and we do that with the altar as well when the offering is done. I make offerings of honey, of incense, of water. I don't obviously slaughter animals. I don't believe in that. I don't understand. Maybe it's just me, but I don't believe in taking life force.
Nor do I.
I mean, our ancestors did. There's Iphigenia, right? And so many others. The Greeks, the Druids, the Vikings, the Egyptians, everybody, the Romans, everybody sacrificed animals and people. And I think they understood why to do it, but they didn't have to do that.
No, I find that devoting your time is acceptable enough sacrifice. Your time, your energy in your works is more than enough to please the gods.
You know, you've slit a poor woman or man's throat, and the gods and goddess would say, I've lost a worshiper. You know, the energy's gone briefly, boom, and they've lost the. So how does that benefit the god or the goddess? I don't think so. When the Egyptians sacrificed an animal, and I don't know if it's true in the Roman and Greek traditions, they slaughtered it. They didn't just cut its throat. They cut it up, and you've got to realize the priests afterwards had a barbecue.
So did the people in many cases, too. This still happens with Greek people during Easter, because a lot of traditionalist Greek families, they'll buy a lamb and they'll raise the lamb until Easter, and then they'll kill the lamb and then make their Easter meal. So in this country,
right,
that's in trouble with the ASPCA in a lot of places. So when I was growing up, there were always stories around Easter of, did you hear this person? Somebody called the ASPCA on them, and you know, they had all sorts of things. But you, as you pointed out, they used to eat the animals slaughtered during antique. For many poor people, it was the only time they really had meat in their diet. When
That's
they
could
go out and feast and have a little piece of meat, because meat was very hard to come by if you weren't rich in antiquity. A lot of people get I've had this conversation a lot. You know, I don't think anybody that I've ever spoken to wants to bring back ancient times, because in ancient times they had slavery. They had they had oppression much greater than that which we experience today. They had a lot of negative things in ancient times, which hopefully we've outgrown. So it's an evolution.
Everybody knows in the Egyptian palaces, you had hundreds of slaves.
Right.
You know, doing everything from bathing the court and the king and the queen and what have you, to making dinner, to building the temples and the palaces themselves. You know, and they were these people had very short lifespans.
Right.
Because they worked very hard. And I'm, you know, as you say, I'm glad those kind of things are gone.
Yeah, me too.
You know, but there was Per-Ankh, which is the school of life. The way the Egyptian children, male, of course, because it was a sexist society, the boys were trained was very cruel. They had a long period where they had to study the hieroglyphs. They also had to learn to be soldiers like the Spartans.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to learn those different arts and things. But if they didn't learn correctly, they were severely whipped. There's a book by Aisha Shawala Derlubich. It's a volume 1 and 2 called Hirbak, which means chickpea in ancient Egyptian.
I remember
right.
This book.
It's a very large book. But it talks about how a temple priest, you know, went from student all the way up to high priest, and how that works. It's a very long process. It was more than 10 years. And, you know, a lot of those people were broken, literally physically broken when they finished. And, you know, they say the Catholic nuns are bitter. These priests and scribes were mean in some cases because of the way they were treated.
Right.
I'm not talking high priest. I'm talking the ones that would walk with a mummy case and walk into the streets. And there's a couple of contradictions. In Bubastis, the city of the cat goddess Bast, if you killed a cat, you'd be executed. However, during the celebration, which is coming up on May 7th, of the Feast of Bast, they mummified thousands and thousands of year-old cats. But
wow.
If you killed one in the street, you'd be killed. I don't understand the contradiction there. And that's true in all the other temples. You had mummified ibises, mummified goats, dogs, for God's sake, mummified hippopotamuses, mummified bulls, the office bull. And that was just, years to mummify, for God's sakes. And they had them in enormous marble sarcophagi. So Egypt had a lot of contradictions. And going back to the altar, I try to make sure that that doesn't happen in the altar, things happening. You know, which god and which goddess do their particular purpose. And it's, you know, there's not a blurred line. Osiris deals with more or less those who have crossed over. Horus works with those that are alive. Nephthys works with the mysterious things from, you know, beyond this realm. Isis works with what's going on now. Hathor is love, and she's Venus, Aphrodite. She's exactly, yeah. I mean, the Greeks copied her. She's Aphrodite. So she's love and beauty and family and sexuality. Nice. Who's a very mysterious goddess, is the goddess that a weaver. In a way, she's like Athena because she weaves the fabric of time. And one of her symbols is a shuttle on a loom. And she also has two crossed arrows. And I know sometimes on the shield of Athena, you have two crossed arrows and a helmet, correct?
The Greeks recognized the Egyptian gods and their gods were the same or very similar. And they equated them when Typhon invaded Olympus and the Olympians fled their home and went into Egypt. It was said that they wore animal masks. So this was one way of making an equivalent. Herodotus spoke of that great length as well.
When I performed the ritual of Bast, everyone in the festival, the opening ritual, we have a beautiful statue of Bast in a naos, which is a cabinet. You open it up, you will reveal the goddess, but everyone is wearing cat masks. It's very Hello Kitty. Everybody wears cat masks. So it's fun. You know, we have incense. It's also a time where you were to bless children and animals. Bast is the Niteru, who blessed the beast and the children. She's the protector of those that can't protect themselves. She's one of my favorite goddesses. She always was. Isis, in the guise of the form called Sotis, and Ra, who's her great-grandfather, are Bast's parents. The Egyptians were very, liberal with their marriages and such. You know that a pharaoh could marry his niece, his sister, sometimes his brother. Akhenaten was known to have married his brother, which is a strange thing. It's not very known much in Egypt that happened, but he did. I'm trying to think of his brothers. But yeah, he married his brother. At the end of his reign, where he was going a little crazy, he did do that, and his daughters, trying to get an heir. And he did have Tutankhamun, but they had spirited him away by then.
The Ptolemies also, they married their own relatives, you know, their close relatives as well. And that seems to have been something that many ancient houses did to keep their bloodline pure.
The Ptolemies, after all, were Macedonian Greek. They weren't even Egyptian.
Yeah.
And in Pella, that's what happened. You either married your cousin or your sister or what have you. Osmenkara, by the way, was Akhenaten's brother's name. You married the king of Macedonia's wife. Might have been his mother, his sister, his aunt, but she was related to him always.
Right.
Philip of Macedonia's son Alexander was the product of he and Olympia. Olympia was his, I think she was his cousin, first cousin, like his sister's daughter. Niece, I mean, not cousin.
And Cleopatra, who wasn't allowed to be a pharaoh, according to the rules, she became a pharaoh by wearing a beard, an artificial beard. So,
they had
different rules back then.
Cleopatra decided she would follow Hatshepsut, who was the first female. Hatshepsut was the 18th dynasty. She was, I guess, an auntie in a way, great aunt to Akhenaten and King Tut. But she decided that she, because her brother was too young to rule, that she would be pharaoh. After a while, her brother got older, and he said, "I don't think so anymore." He was Tutmosis III, and he took over. And we really don't know what happened to her. And, you know, there's a lot of queens in Egypt that disappeared mysteriously, including Nefertiti.
Mm-hmm.
She rules. Yeah. They just suddenly leave history somehow. I'm going to go back. I keep jumping off topic, but going back to the altar. When you are going to close the ritual, you're going to thank each of those gods and goddesses and dismiss them one at a time. And then you're going to, again, break the frame around the altar so that you release the energy and it goes into it. Before we do that, we take our affirmations, prayers, hopes, and dreams. We have a large brass bowl, and we will put them into the fire. And that energy goes out into the universe, and whatever leftover of the incense or what have you also goes into that bowl to release that energy up. And it's quite beautiful when we do this. And I train everyone I work with to work this ritual and open it and close it. And it's very important, I feel, to address the elements in the four directions and also dismiss them, thank them for their participation, and then close that energy so that it's not hanging around. Is that true also in the Greek ritual?
For many practitioners, yes. I've always, when I was doing rituals back in the day, I would give them the option of leaving or staying because I'd welcomed them and they remained welcome.
In Wiccan pagan traditions, they will say, "Go if you will, stay if you must."
Stay you must. It was like inviting your friends or your relatives over for something, and if they wanted to crash, they're welcome to crash. So it's the same type. It was an open invitation. They came, they attended, they participated, they helped. They didn't have to go right away if they didn't want to. It wasn't a bye, everybody. Thanks. We had a great time. That's how I thought of it back then. And now most of my ritual work is internal. In my inner temple. So they're there all the time. I don't need to invite them or chase them out. They're there.
I feel like when I'm in a group, we do the ritual physically because some people need that direction. They need to see that.
Right.
It helps them work. You know, it's props. It really is props. But you should be in a very strong meditative state or a spiritual state before you go into the ritual, and you should be able to release that energy out of yourself as you exit the ritual, knowing that what you wanted to do was accomplished. I always feel so much better afterwards.
I agree with you, and if you're doing group work, it is very important for people to be able to, it's theater, but it's immersive theater, and people play different roles in terms of the gods that they represent and the actions that they're taking on mythological significance. So if you're doing group work, it is something very important to the group work, and I'm glad that you're doing it. That sounds awesome.
Well, I think that kind of thing is, went out a while ago. And forgive me for saying this, but the big three, the Christians, the Muslims, and the Jews, look down on it. But they do rituals. Go to a Catholic church at Easter. You have a huge ritual going on, and it's theater. And that's what we do. You know, and I want people to know that it's positive theater and positive energy.
Right.
In perfect perfect trust. We want people to know that what we're doing is sending good things out there into the universe. I frown very much on people who do ritual to do harm.
Right.
I can't get my head on that. I don't understand it. You know, I say if something is bad, if something is wrong, leave it, as Queen said, in the lap of the gods. Ask Ma'at, ask justice to take care of that, and they will. Don't do it yourself. You know, ask for justice. Don't ask for revenge. You know, you have Medea, who was like the queen of revenge, you know,
yes.
Or Tosca. And those things, they didn't end well, did they? And if you put the energy out there to get the right karma balance fixed, things have a better result. All around, everybody is happier. And everybody, there's less mess and less negative energy hanging around. And I'm all for that.
I'm all for that as well. Did you start a new cycle of instruction?
I'm going to do that now as we go toward Beltane,
okay.
The May Day. And I will take applicants and I will take people. And I will show people, depending on their level of education and their own energy, where they can go from there.
And are you going to be starting everybody like at the pronos, as we say in Greek, like outside the temple or the outer court, as it's called in paganism?
There is a peristyle and a hypostyle.
Okay.
A peristyle is the we have an outer court and an inner court. Of course you do. You have to. Those that are more advanced are going to be inside, and those that are just learning will be outside. You know, and as they become more knowledgeable, they move further and further into the inner temple, which gets kind of crowded after a while, I have to say.
Yeah. I'd like to keep appraised of what's happening there, because we're doing something very similar. Part of it is what you had said as well, that if what we're doing isn't where their destiny lies, we are able to point them in another direction. So it'll be great to learn about what you're doing so I can point people in that direction if somebody comes in and much more attuned to comedic energies than to Hellenic ones.
And you know that my goal, and I keep saying this every time we get together, is to have a physical building where
yes.
I want all of you, everybody invited, to work in the altar space. It's kind of bring your own altar sort of a thing.
Uh-huh.
I want it clear and white and perfect, so that when people come, they can put their ritual tools and things into the center or however they do it, and then take it with them. But I want people to be able to observe ritual and participate if the particular group is open to that. I have many public as well as private rituals. It's better that way. Some things I leave to those who are more adept, and they should be private.
Agreed and understood. Most certainly so. Some things are better openly shared, and some things are better not to be shared initially. I see that now, that it is very easy to get metaphysical information, like the law of attraction that is on everyone's lips. That was something that was hidden and guarded for a very long time. And we see that even though it's helped very many people to have that information and to make use of it, it's also caused lots and lots of harm in our world as well.
Oh, so, my God, yes. Look
yeah.
what's going on now, I hate to say, in the Ukraine. You know, what will we call him, prime minister over there, has his eyes on the seacoast. That's what he wants. Because Russia doesn't have access to the sea. So he's using his own energy to cause harm rather than being in brotherhood with the Ukraine. That didn't work that
right.
way. Forgive me. See, it was
Muscle.
True. I sneezed. That's an ancient superstition that if you sneeze, things are true.
Yes, I've heard that superstition, and I found that it works much of the time in revealing hidden truth. And also in advertising, and especially now with the social media and the immediacy of everything, these ancient occult techniques now generally shared are wreaking havoc because people know that the power of the mind and how the mind creates and influences reality. So some people are influencing reality in ways that maybe they shouldn't.
I blame Alexa and Siri. I have to laugh. I've gotten used to Alexa now. She's kind of my mini goddess. I get up in the morning. I ask what the temperature is, or I ask her, what's going on, or what's going on outside. And she, it's automatic. The goddess Alexa gives me, in fact, her lights just went on. The goddess Alexa gives me the information I need to start my day.
There you go.
Whereas before, you might put on the radio or put on the TV, I'm asking a robot, my own little, in a way, my own little Ariel, my own little spirit there that comes down to help. It's kind of, and it's, if you think about it, that's artificial intelligence doing that.
Yes, it is.
So that is electronic energy that we're drawing into a little disc. So that's kind of spirit, in a weird way, spiritual.
Oh, it is. And we have the legends of what happened in lost lands like Atlantis. And they seem to have had many of the same things we had, and in magic, too. The Akashic records are very much like the internet, in how they operate and what they do.
I am, because of a guide that I work with astrally, as a trans medium, I can work with what's called the Book of Life. And it's a very weird entity that I go through. My guide's name is Faran Siti. He is I'll call him a enlightened master. He was never human. He is a all-high being that inhabited most of the ancient Egyptian temples. I encountered him when I was 18, and he was able to tell people that were connected to the Edgar Cayce Center what their past lives were.
Mm-hmm.
And we looked them up. And, it's one thing to tell somebody something, but when they can go and look it up.
Right.
And the hair on the back of your neck stands up. Oh, my God, you were this person, you were this being, and you died in this area, and you lived. And you're like, oh, my God, it's true. And this is something I also work with as a medium. It's not just my tarot cards or my life readings, but I can do past life regressions, too. And the priests and priestesses of Egypt were well known for that. Alexander went to the priests of Amun in Karnak to ask what his, his destiny would be. And they hailed him as the son of Amun.
Who's this?
And made him pharaoh. You do know that. The first Ptolemaic pharaoh was actually Alexander the Great himself.
Yes. And some speculate that his unknown tomb or his remains are in Egypt somewhere.
Well, they know it was in Alexandria. Many, many people have talked about it, that it was in the city of Alexandria. It was visited during the time of Herodotus.
Right.
He saw Alexandria's tomb. So, yeah, it was in Alexandria. If he didn't think of himself as a pharaoh, I don't think he would have done that. He probably would have been buried back in Pella, don't you think?
He accepted, he was one of the few people who became a god in their lifetime. And
he certainly did.
Taught us all many things.
Look who's talking. Hello.
Fortunately,
Mr. Invictus.
Yeah, well, that's another story for another day. Fortunately, we're going to have a monthly show now. I just need to pen the day. But we can continue this conversation, not with stops and starts, but continuously. And I really enjoyed what you taught today. And I'm looking forward to what you have to teach. And I'm looking forward to helping build a bridge between what I'm doing and what you're doing. And I wish you the greatest success in your larger dream, because it is something that our community can definitely benefit from.
Anybody who wants to contribute, get in touch with me. I'm building a not-for-profit corporation so that we can actually acquire a building and, you know, use this. I am an ordained minister as well, so I do weddings and all those kind of things. But the most important thing is this way I can build a school and use it in more of a religious process or context.
And how can people contact you? How can you be reached?
They can contact me via Facebook, Michael K. Waterman at Facebook, you know. And my email address is mkwaterman@icloud.com. Or you can phone me if you want to, 516-650-3691. I've had that phone number forever. That's why, even though I live in Jersey, I have a Long Island phone number because I've had it for way over 20 years, 25 years. And I can't, I have too many customers and celebrants that I work with that I can give that phone number up.
And while you're talking about the customers, you also have a really great divination practice. How can people tap into that?
That is Phone a Wizard, but I want them to contact me through the phone number.
Okay.
It's better that phoneawizard.com right now is having a little issue. I don't know what's going on with that. The main server is giving me ajuda. So I'm working right through with, you know, with my chat, with my phone number or my email. Either one of those will be fine. And if you look at my friends list on Facebook, it's very large because many of my customers, my celebrants, are also on my Facebook page. I'm on Instagram too, and I'm also on Twitter.
And I will be inviting you to our next forum, which is going to be on mermaids, because I know you're very knowledgeable about mermaids. So that'll be.
Well, I have a very large collection of them because of my grandparents, and that's another story for another day. But yes, I collect mermaids. I always have.
So thanks again, Kamwas. Until next time, joyous journey and amazing adventures. And to all who tuned in tonight, this program will be available on demand in case you missed it live in about 15, 20 minutes. And we're going to close with Virginia Ackley's Golden Bough, which is a wonderful song written and performed by a very wonderful person.
Lady of day, I have